The Positively Wolfy Podcast. Unqualified commentary on allegedly real news. The Positively Wolfy Podcast. Hello and welcome to the Positively Wolfy Podcast. They call me Mr. Positivity Wolfy T. You can follow me on Twitter at PositivelyWolf1. And if you want to email the show, you can reach us at PositivelyWolfy@comcast.net. On today's show, we're going to discuss the coldest revenge, it's what's for dinner, and it's a hobby, not a habit. Today, I'm joined once again by the returning Michael McGivern.
Yes. Wolfie, thank you for having me back.
Welcome back, Mike. You've been missed. It's been a while.
Too long. But, you know, I'm out on probation and the house arrest is going well.
If you hear beeping in the background, it's because you went out for a smoke or something. Just kidding. He's not on house arrest. He's just very busy, which, happens from time to time. But he's back, and we're going to cover some unqualified commentary on allegedly real news today. And I think we are ready to get going. What do you think?
I'm here, man. Let's do it.
All right. Our first article is from the New York Post. And the headline is, Florida man gets 20 years in prison for cutting off penis of wife's lover. And his name is Mr. Yamaguchi-san. And he choppy choppy you pee pee. It just hit me that they did this in the WWF in 1998.
Vince was way ahead of his time.
So, yeah, do you remember that Val Venus was having sex with the wife of the manager of Kai and Tai?
I do remember the big Valboski, whose gimmick was he was a porn star, so there was a lot to cut off there. Yes. I also liked the stereotype of Japanese men not being very well endowed. So there was a multi-level wrestling storyline of the late 90s.
Very layered.
Very layered. And we don't get storytelling like that anymore in pro wrestling, unfortunately. No. And I don't know if you have caught up with Val Venus, but he was kicked off Twitter because he's like way out in left field on some of his political commentary. So
he's QAnon, isn't he?
He's QAnon, yeah, absolutely. But it really says something that he's QAnon and he got kicked off Twitter, though. Very few people.
Well, I thought they kicked most of the Q people off of Twitter.
I don't know. I don't keep up on the QAnon, but I know, a lot of these sites aren't big on actually booting people, but I know he was a libertarian for a long time.
Yeah, he's really big into marijuana, I think.
Which
might explain a few things.
Look, he's not the first professional wrestler that liked the geef and then has some bizarre political beliefs, I think. So he's the one wrestler that got booted off Twitter. So, I mean, what a legacy he's going to leave someday.
I think he's from Canada originally.
I don't know.
So he was radicalized after coming to the States, obviously. Mm-hmm. But that angle they did back in the day, one of the funny things was when they did a demonstration of what Mr. Yamaguchi-san was going to do, and they pulled out this big-ass sausage roll.
Yeah.
And he had a samurai sword, like a katana, and he chops it right up on the stage in front of everybody. And then later they kidnapped him, and they, like, stripped him naked and had him tied up Like, his hands were tied up above his head, like from the ceiling, and they had him on the chopping block. And I believe, do you remember, I believe the next week they revealed that he was saved at the last minute by a special, I don't want to call him a celebrity, but a somebody who was in the news for a very similar incident.
Oh, really?
That being John Wayne Bobbitt.
John Wayne Bobbitt.
And apparently it was cold in there, too, so that helped, you know.
Well, where's John Wayne Bobbitt with this story in Florida?
I don't know, but I almost ran a story on the podcast last year about John Wayne Bobbitt being close to losing his leg.
What?
Yeah, he almost. Well, I don't know what the follow-up was, but he was at risk of losing his leg to a infection. They were going to amputate it.
Oh, my. That would have been.
And I think he had already lost like a toe or something on the other foot or something. Like, this guy's just losing
diabetes or what?
Well, I think he like stepped on a nail or something. He's working construction and then like he let it go for like 6 months and then he's like, oh, my foot's kind of fucked up. Maybe I should get checked out.
Oh, John Wayne. By the way, is his name like John Bobbitt and he's gone by John Wayne Bobbitt? Like in the same way that, you know, like a assassin will always have the full name so that you don't confuse them. Like, with you know what I mean? Else. With somebody else.
They always have the three names.
Like, is it John Wayne Bobbitt? Because other John Bobbitts in America were like, no. It was, we don't want to get confused. My penis is still intact. Or, you know, I'm all there, baby.
Well, you know, John Bobbitt, he got into the porn industry for a while.
Yeah, well, he got the appendage back gone. I think it was enhanced, too.
Yeah, probably.
I don't know what kind of penile implant there is. And quite frankly, I don't want to know.
Well, you know, these days they can grow one on your arm. We talked about that on the podcast.
Yep. Well, which is great.
I think it was like the same thing. That guy had an infection in his dick and he just let it go until it fell off. And then, you know, John Wayne had one in his leg and he let it go until his leg fell off.
Yeah. Well, Lorena, like, I'm sorry if you're with a Latina, I wouldn't mess. Like, Lorena for the rest of eternity has put a bad stereotype on the Hispanic community, but I wouldn't mess with one if I was dating one. And obviously Mr. Bonilla, I'm assuming, is of a Latin background. And obviously any story that starts with the three words "a Florida man," you're in for a wild ride.
Yeah, so a Florida man will spend 2 decades behind bars for pulling a gun on his wife's lover and cutting off her lover's penis with a pair of scissors. Yeah, shiver. Alex Bonilla, 51, was ordered to spend 20 years in prison for the July 2019 attack at a home in Bell, news station WKMG reported Wednesday. Bonilla allegedly barged into his neighbor's home, where he proceeded to threaten the man with a handgun and metal pipe. So this guy was ready to go. He had his metal pipe.
Yeah, he was.
And his handgun. I mean, do you need both, really? Like, that's
no,
a little bit overkill. And then scissors, too. Do you think he had brought his own scissors or used some in the home? We just picked them
up. That was a question I had. Because if you got a gun in one hand and a pipe in another,
yeah,
like, why don't you use one of those instead of getting the scissors? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I could kill the guy or I could beat him half to death. Oh, I know. I'll just cut off his penis.
And your hands are full. Like, I mean, you're kind like of you're, at you're a disadvantage.
Struggling to look around, like, what is a tool I could use?
You're almost at a disadvantage because, like, I don't know. Like, if they make a quick move, like, you don't have the dexterity to, like, make a stop or anything like that. Like,
right.
Or, like, I don't know. Is it harder to shoot a handgun one-handed? I guess it depends on what size gun it is. Or swing a pipe. I assume you're using your weak arm to swing that pipe.
Mm-hmm. So. And I don't know. Why not just swing the pipe at his crotch?
I have no idea. I wouldn't even think to do this. Like, I mean, this takes planning, I'm sure.
Well, I definitely did, because he had found out, if you scroll down more down the story, he knew about this affair for a while.
Yeah, so let me continue here. It says, he then forced the man into the bathroom and tied him up before he forcefully cut off the victim's penis with a pair of scissors, the official said. I mean, forcefully versus, like, what? Just gently? I think he had some intent there. The married father allegedly told the man, quote, "This is normal. You will not die today."
Dude, that sentence doesn't even make sense.
This is normal. In what society, what culture is this normal? Just cutting dicks off.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, technically circumcision, but this has gone too far. This is circumcision gone several inches too far.
Oh, man. If you did this on a circumcision, you'd probably lose your job.
Oh.
I'd hope you'd lose your job.
I don't know. I'm pro circumcision as much as the next guy, but this is such a topic. I don't even want to think about that right now.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Maybe I should tread lightly on this, but I don't know. Did you take, like, psychology class in high school?
Yeah.
Because I remember they showed us a case of a guy who was on Oprah, and he had a botched circumcision when he was born. They botched it, and then the doctor's like, well, fuck it, cut it all off, we'll raise him as a girl.
Oh, yeah.
And, he was kind of messed up, like, his whole childhood, and he couldn't figure out why, because he was a girl. But, like, it's like, the things are weird, like, whatever. Yeah, and he eventually found out about it. Yeah, and he ended up committing suicide.
Oh, yeah.
But,
well,
I mean, I don't know.
I can imagine that would be pretty traumatic once the sideburns start growing in.
Well, I think they're giving him,
you're right. No, I know.
Like, hormones on the down low, but
yeah.
Still, like, yeah, exactly. You had puberty and, like,
well, I mean, he's basically trans.
Yeah. Not by choice,
but I'm just saying, like, he's in his head, you know, he's like, he's a guy.
Right.
You know, but he's being treated like a woman in a woman's body. I can't imagine having to go through that. Or being tied up with, you know, my lover's husband cutting off my crank. Yeah. These are good problems not to have.
I mean, if anything is going to scare you away from cheating, it should be this.
Well, and it's so hacky. You know, you're banging the neighbor's wife, really?
Yeah.
Like, come on. Seems so, I don't know.
Very Florida.
Well, I mean, I guess it could happen anywhere, but it just seems, yeah, I don't know. So trite. What's next? You sleep with the babysitter? Like, really?
Is the milkman still coming around?
Yeah, what, the milkman? Come on. But the key of saying, like, this is normal, you will not die today, it tells me the guy's, Mr. Bonilla, is completely off his rocker.
He's not.
That doesn't sound like something... somebody who's all there.
He's not playing on the full deck.
Yeah. And why that wasn't.
Well, it's, you know, like, how do you know he's defense. Not, how do you know he's not going to die? Like, he could bleed out.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's, well, and further evidence of Mr. Bonilla's mental state. He then took the severed appendage and ran across the street to his own home.
Ah!
What are you going to do with it?
Put it on ice.
I want to know what he did with it.
I want to know too.
I don't know. I can't imagine touching another guy's junk, let alone cutting it off and running across the street
I do not want to hold a severed cock in my hand. That is not very high on the list of things I want to. That's not on the bucket list.
I'm going to take it over to my house so that they can't reattach it, or, like, I don't know.
And we have no follow up on the guy, right? That's now he, like, crotchless.
He's like horsedick.mpeg on Miss March.
Oh.
Have you seen that movie?
I've heard of it.
Oh, it's so funny.
That's what I hear.
It's very, very funny.
The other thing, and this I never know how this works, but you know, Bonilla got the 20-year sentence, but he had been ordered to pay like $250,000 in damages to the guy.
Yeah.
Like, let's be real, he doesn't have $250,000. Like, where? Like, I always wonder what happens with those those damages. They just never get paid, or like, are wages garnished, or if you're in prison, how can you pay off that debt?
Well, I'm sure he gets like 25 cents an hour to make license plates or something.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Well, hell, it's Florida. He's probably now he's gonna have to look up like old phone books to make up people that can vote illegally.
They'll play both sides against each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it just doesn't get paid. Like, there's no, like, if he doesn't have the money and he's not working, I don't think there's a way to like enforce that. I think if he had a job, they could probably garnish his wages or like a portion of his wages, but like, they're never going to get $251,000 from this guy.
Right.
Ever.
Especially he's 51. Like, I don't know. Do you think he's got another 20 years of prison life in him? I don't.
I mean,
I think he's seen the end of freedom.
He's got
not worth it.
He's got a weird looking head. His head is kind of misshapen. It's like flat on one side and then kind of curvy on the other.
No, he's got a fucked up head. Yes.
It's very weird. Let's see. So the grisly attack came 2 months after Bonilla had discovered the man was having sex with his wife, authorities said. Bonilla pleaded no contest to charges of kidnapping, aggravated battery with a deadly weapon, and aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. So I wish there was more follow-up on the condition of the victim, although I don't blame him for not wanting that to be public.
No. I also, if I'm Bonilla, I'm hoping the story didn't make the rounds in prison. You're like, hey, number one, you know, don't let him near scissors. And number two, I wouldn't want it to be known that I willfully walked around with a guy's cock in my hand. Like, hey.
Although maybe you want it to go around because that's intimidating. You fuck with this guy, he takes your dick.
It's either one. It's either don't give him, you know, scissors, because who knows what I'll do with it, or it's he's got no problem going down there.
Right. I mean, that's
so,
that's his first point of retribution, is taking dicks. You know, he's he's a real badass when it comes to that. Don't fuck with him.
It's a brutal story. I'm glad we talked about it.
I am too. I'm glad it brought up memories of Val Venus and Kyle. Choppy choppy, you pee pee.
totally something that would be on television today still. Definitely.
I wonder if that'll make it to Peacock, you think?
Oh my God, hell no.
That whole stretch of like 5 years is not going to be on Peacock.
I don't know, man. You know, like the Saturday Night Live episodes on Peacock are just like edited to the bone, and like the WWE Network stuff. And I do get it for everyone involved, but man, if like, you're going to take out the stuff from decades ago that, yeah, like it's not politically correct now, but you're going to take out the politically incorrect stuff from shows like Saturday Night Live or the WWE. Like
it's not even worth, it's not worth really, subscribing to.
But there's a ton of stuff on like The Office, and yeah. I don't know if Will and Grace is on there, but that's a show that has some risque like stuff on it too, you know, that I don't know, where does it end, I guess.
I don't know. That's the thing I question too. Like with WWE, like, I mean, wrestling has played on stereotypes basically forever. Like
the day one.
Like there's like the '80s, literally everybody was a stereotype.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
You might as well just cut all that out. Like, I don't know what you're going to leave from that stuff. And then, you know, even in the '90s and the 2000s, like it became less prevalent the last maybe 10 or 15 years. But like, even like 15 years ago, you had Umaga out there as the Samoan savage. Like, I don't know, where does it stop? But I mean, as wrestling fans, like, you know what you're getting into, right? Like, but like NBC buying that stuff and then like just all of a sudden being like, oh, I didn't know you guys did that kind of stuff.
NBC, the network that's like been airing this. Right. Like, they're the ones who had the WWE in the 80s, and you know, they've had partnership with USA Network for, you know, 25 odd plus years.
Yeah.
You know, with their properties and stuff. So again, I would like to think that the average person can watch something from the late 90s and be like it was a different time, you know, like,
you just put a warning.
I'm not going to do that now, you know? But you know, it, like, I don't know. I'm able to watch, like, I was watching something like, it was at my dad's a couple years ago. He was just watching Bonanza because that's what, you know, old guys do in the middle of the day. And, you know, like Bonanza, like the Native Americans on the show, the bad guys, and they're just white guys with orange, right, like paint. It was the most like insensitive thing. I just started laughing because I'm like, oh my God, this is so bad. But like, the show is from 1965.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they didn't have like Native American actors, and you know, like, yes, the paint, they're, oh God, you could Google it. It's the most over the top thing you've ever seen in your life. But
I saw you retweet something the other day about like somebody had,
yes, taped,
they were watching TV and they took a video of it, and it was a warning about how the program they're about to watch was a product of its time, and that it was insensitive
Based on stereotypes
that were wrong then and are wrong today. It was wrong then,
it's wrong now, but we hope that it opens a dialogue, a discussion.
Viewer discretion is advised.
Viewer discretion advised.
And then it was the fucking Beverly Hillbillies.
It was the Beverly Hillbillies.
Like the least offensive show.
Like, they told somebody else, like, what is the offensive part of that show? They were Southern.
Because they're making fun of poor Southern people.
Yeah, they're...
But they're white, so, like, who cares? Like, we could make fun of white people, I thought.
I don't know. There's a lot of stuff. You know, Richard Dawson on The Family Feud just kissing every woman on the show on the lips. What a gig. What a gig. I mean, that was just...
When you're Richard Dawson, they just let you, right?
You know, and every woman that's ever been on that show could taste the whiskey on his breath. Or, you know what I mean? I'm sure he wasn't sober on a lot of those episodes.
You just see them cringe after. They're all excited, and then it happens. They're like, oh, I wish I didn't do that.
Well, some of those women on that show were awfully young.
Yeah, I mean, right?
It's like a 60-year-old guy, and it's like the youngest sister is like 19, and he's going in for the peck. My God.
He's lucky that one of them wasn't Alex Bonilla's wife.
You're telling me. But you know what? Like, we can sit here and laugh about that stuff because we don't take it seriously. And it's not like we can go in the time machine.
You can't change it.
No, you can't. Anyway. It wasn't like women's liberation wasn't going on at the time. So
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, yes, I can cringe at some of this stuff or be like, you know, oh, that was bad, you know, but I don't get bent out of shape over it.
No.
Then again, I'm a cis white, you know, male. So I don't know. I guess nothing can offend me.
I mean, you are on this podcast, so. Although we have one diverse co-host that comes on, you know. So I guess we're good.
No, I think so.
All right. Well, let's take a quick break here, and then we'll come back with our next story. All right. Welcome back. Our next story, also from the New York Post, and the headline is, "Behold the 3D printed cruelty-free ribeye steak." I would dispute the cruelty-free thing on this, because I feel like it would be cruel to whoever's being fed this.
Yes, cruel to taste. Have you tried, you know, like one of those Impossible Burgers?
No.
No?
No. I don't eat regular hamburger. Like, I'll eat, like, steak and other like, better cuts of beef, but hamburger's a no for me.
Really?
I don't know. I just never got into it. Like, I never liked it as a kid and never grew on it on me either, so. It must be the texture or something, but.
Well, and you're really going to hate an Impossible Burger because that's the texture of it's the only thing that you could tell that it's not real meat.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it tastes just like the real thing.
I heard those are just as bad for you as like the regular burgers too.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like I heard like there's no like nutritional benefit over like a regular Whopper.
Yeah, well, you're just not eating red meat. Like,
yeah, that's the only thing.
Political, you know, societal statement. So I don't know.
I also question too, like when they say plant-based, like what plants are you putting in there? Because they never say what plants are going into it.
Well, I don't know. I think, especially with something like this ribeye, I mean, first of all, like saying that it's 3D printed and cruelty-free, like that, like, I don't care. That makes me not want to like try it.
Like, well, 3D printed makes it sound like it's made of plastic.
I know. Well, exactly. I'm just saying, like, a lot of the stuff just has a marketing problem.
Right.
Like, if you didn't tell anybody that it was 3D printed or cruelty free, I think people would give it a chance.
Well, I don't even know what they mean by cruelty free. Maybe it explains it in the article, but, like, do we just assume that every meat product is not cruelty free?
Like, yeah, I think that's what they're
just the act of slaughtering is cruel.
Yeah. Or, you know, putting them in a feedlot or, yeah, I think that's what they're getting at. But if you, you know, if you read from it, you know, it's made from, you know, an Israeli company. And it's like, really, like, Israel doesn't have a lot of room for, you know, packing a bunch of cows on the slaughter floor.
That's true. Let's get into the article. The burgeoning lab-grown meat industry has made its first foray into the fine dining. Into fine dining. I almost like it better, into the fine dining. With an artificially forged ribeye steak, a cut that can run hundreds of dollars in some restaurants. That's a lot of money for a steak. This cruelty-free counterpart, however, could go for as low as $50 when it hits dining areas as early as next year, according to the Daily Mail. The new dish, created by Israeli food laboratory Aleph Farms, marks the world's first 3D bioprinted ribeye made with real cow tissue, despite the fact that no live animals were hurt or killed in the process. The breakthrough follows the company's initial leap into the lab-grown meat industry in 2018 when they debuted the first-ever slaughter-free steak though 3D printing was not used at that time. Israel's food science industry has pioneered the lab meat industry as of late, with food science companies such as Aleph, who also recently grew meat in space, as well as Future Meat Technologies and Redefined Meat, developing cruelty-free alternatives within the nation's borders. The process of printing meat may begin with the plant-based ingredients, or in the case of Aleph steak, real bovine cells that have been cloned and cultivated in a lab setting.
Mm.
The four primary cells that make up meat, muscle tissue, fat, blood, and the support cells create the, quote, ink used to print the steak. Man, is this better or worse?
Mind-blowing stuff.
Is this better or worse than the lab-grown meat that uses human cells?
Soylent Green is made out of people.
It's a real thing.
It is.
We talked about it on a past episode.
I know.
They didn't really explain how they get the cells, but somehow you get cells off of yourself, put them in some kind of dish, and then they turn into a human steak. But it's not cannibalism.
Hard pass on cannibalism.
They said it's not cannibalism because you're eating yourself, your own cells, something. I don't know. But I don't know what would be less appetizing, that, which kind of grew in a petri dish, versus something that's 3D printed.
Yeah, I don't want to know that this was 3D printed. I guess. I don't know. If you want to say that it's, you know, not real meat or lab grown meat, maybe I'd try it as a novelty.
Right. But
the 3D printed part is the part that really, you know, gets me. Now, you know, I was told as a kid watching the Jetsons that by now we'd be able to take like a ribeye pill and we'd be satiated. Like, I'd rather do that. And what we've got going on now.
That's true. The Jetsons lied to us. They're all living in the clouds. They all had their flying cars, although they're still using cash. And the wife didn't have a job and spent all the money. It was very patriarchal. You know,
I gotta admit.
Maybe we cycle back to that, you know, after we kind of get through this phase, we'll cycle back to the patriarchy when we're living in the clouds.
and you know, in the future, according to the Jetsons, nobody was morbidly obese or wearing just sweats all the time. That's like the one thing about the future. Like, nobody ever wears denim in the future. It's always silvery spacesuits. And not just sweats.
They got those big floating collars. Like, they have collars, but they're not like attached to their shirts.
Yeah.
Mr. Spacely was a little chubby, but he was short. So I think he was just condensed.
Right. But, you know, actually, you know what the craziest part of the Jetsons that is still not realistic? Like, the high school football, like, team, you know, like the refs didn't still just spot the ball at a random spot where they just kind of felt like they actually had lasers that could spot the ball correctly.
You're ruining the game. You're ruining the integrity of football.
The integrity of the game by just letting some guy eyeball it. Multi-billion-dollar industry. And one guy's just going.
Bring a literal chain out that we have to.
a real chain. God almighty.
That's just sitting on the sidelines, just kind of at random. Like,
but line Wolfie, it up. Wolfie, if you put a microchip on the football will weigh like 12 pounds. Because that, you know, microchips are like so heavy.
Not that they already have them in every shoulder pad on the field to do all these fucking advanced stats and calculate catch probability and.
Oh my God.
Max speed.
Yeah, I don't know how Amazon could figure it out. No. My God. Just drives me nuts. That in the electronic strike zone. Wolfie. Jose Altuve is 5'6" and Aaron Judge is 6'7". How are you going to be able to tell the difference in an electronic strike zone if the players are different heights? I don't know.
I mean, networks have only been using that technology for 20 years now.
Ask Elon. Yeah, we've only had it on TV for 20 goddamn years.
And it's been like 10 years since they like started keeping it up there, like during every pitch. They used to just do it on replays.
I don't like that, but like that's the thing, though. If it's good enough to have just permanently on the broadcast,
right,
and then have the, you know, the announcers go, well, that was, you know, outside, or, you know, that was like, you know, low. Like, we don't have the technology to do that in the actual game. Like, you can't put a buzzer in a guy in the ump's pocket. Right. And if it buzzes, it's a strike.
Like, yeah. I don't know. I mean, what the hell? Then again, like, if you do that, then Joe West and Angel Hernandez, you know, people come to see them call balls and strikes. Like, that's the way, reason why people buy tickets.
It is a part of the price of admission.
They come to see the umpires.
Ed Hockley and Angel. You know, just, there is some sad truth to that.
I paid $500 to see Gene Steratore take an index card.
His index card. But that's the thing I'll never understand. And it is like an ego thing, obviously. But I will never understand at this point in, like, I'll just say baseball. The only controversial part of an umpire's job is the strike zone.
Yeah.
So everything else we've done, replay, you know, nobody really mentions it, but you rarely see the player or manager just go ape shit on the ump because we have replay now, right? So a manager's, instead of blowing a gasket on, you know, a bad call, like, I'll just go, hey, all right, just, you know, go to replay. And, you know, if the call's upheld, then they're not going to go nuts over it, right? So
Literally
the only thing left in the game that makes a player or manager or the fans ride an ump's ass is the strike zone. And they don't want to, like, they could have the easiest job in the world that makes $250,000 for 8 months of work.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know about you, but like, how could you not want, like, and you want to find the next generation of umpires? Like, tell a kid in college, like, hey, you know, if you want to like break into minor league ball, you know, even rookie ball has that technology now. Like, they're never going to ride your ass. Stick with it long enough. And you got a union job making 200 grand a year and you get your winners off. Sounds great.
I mean, yeah.
Sounds like a great job to me.
Because, like, you still got to be there, like, to do the, you know, plays at the plate and stuff like that. And
exactly. You still got to make the calls.
Yeah, like call foul balls and stuff
and
like
hell,
that.
And, hell, I think they should add another guy to each crew. So one of the guys is just actually in, like, the press box or something watching the replay in the stadium. Like, instead of calling it in, you know? Because then you could add 15 jobs. Because there's, you know, 15 crews of whatever, you know, four guys. Well, now, you know, every fifth day you can sit up in the press box. You're not telling me every ump in Major League Baseball wouldn't like basically the day off every fifth day?
Well, you can't see them in the press box though, right?
Like... I know that. But that's why, like, you know.
They'll have, you know, to be on the big screen the whole time, right?
Yeah.
Like, make sure I'm on the Tron.
This is how I would think. Like, you're umping in Atlanta or St. Louis in August, and it's 97 degrees. Like, all right, you guys go take it. I'll be up in the booth.
Right.
Like, I don't know. It sounds like a great perk to the job to me.
Yeah, it's got to just be an ego thing, right, at this point?
Of course. Of course.
There can't be really any other reasonable explanation. But I don't know. You think Joe West would eat a 3D printed steak? He seems like he doesn't turn down too many meals.
His nickname is Cowboy Joe West.
He's a maverick, isn't he?
He's a maverick. He's eating the real thing, baby.
and lots but, of it.
Dude, I don't know. I mean, just with the environment alone, like, I just think that plant-based 3D printed meat's going to be more and more here to stay.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I find it hard to find it appetizing, you know, this fake fucking...
Well, I think now, but 20 years from now?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess if it's, like, the only option, you know, if they outlaw real... But, like, what are they going to do? Just stop breeding these animals? Like, I thought the whole point was because they farted too much.
Yeah, the methane's pretty serious. No, I don't know if it's going to be an issue in a first world country like America. Like, yeah. I'll be here. It'll be a part of the system because there are a lot of people will do it
just so they can say, you know, I'm helping the environment.
Sure. Look, definitely some pats on the back.
I'm single-handedly fighting climate change.
But India and, you know, Africa, places like that, are they really going to say no to a plant-based steak?
I don't know, but this is made of cow cells.
Well, it's cow cells, but you know, cows have plenty of cells.
So does that, I don't know, you mentioned India. Does that still count as eating a cow? Because I know they don't eat cows.
That's a great point. Well, my point about just
feeding a population,
foods, chicken, whatever, in a place like India. But boy, if they don't get this COVID under control, I don't know how much longer India is going to be around. that's your insensitive take of the week. I like India. Don't get mad at me.
Well, we haven't been canceled yet, so.
That's fine.
Anyway, let's jump back in the article. We recognize some consumers will crave thicker and fattier cuts of meat, said LF CEO Didier Tobias.
Well, there's a tell, by the way, that it's not very good. It's not thick and it's not fatty.
Right.
Mm.
And it's going to cost $50 a plate, is what they said. You know, as little as $50. This accomplishment represents our commitment to meeting our consumers' unique preferences and taste buds. We'll continue to progressively diversify our offerings. Tobia anticipates the ribeye could arrive in supermarkets during the next 2 to 3 years, pending U.S. Department of Agriculture inspection and approval. We are executing a clear plan to achieve cost parity for cultivation of meat products at scale, Tobia said. We expect to achieve this goal within 5 years from our 2022 soft launch, which is faster than the new generation of plant-based meat substitutes, he said in a reference to market rivals Impossible Foods and Beyond Meat, which rely on ingredients from plants to design a meat-like product.
Mm.
The news of Aleph's forthcoming 3D printed and other artificially grown steaks comes several weeks after American startup Eat Just announced their pilot launch of lab cultured chicken in Singapore.
Mm. There you go.
So this is a emerging market, I believe is what they call that. So we'll see how that goes. I'm not eager to try this. I'm a pretty picky eater in general. So I'm not really adventurous with my food, but this doesn't sound appetizing to me.
This sounds like you better get used to it to me.
I hope not. I'll probably just starve. I'll just eat processed sugary food instead. Like we did in the 90s. Like now everybody's oh, I really go to the Whole Foods and raw and shit like that.
I don't know, man. Some of these food documentaries on like Netflix and stuff, we are screwed.
All we can do is laugh about it.
That's all. That's the only thing I can control.
And I love to laugh. Although this third article may give us something else to try to kind of just cope with everything. Also from the New York Post, and the headline is Columbia Professor, I do heroin regularly for work-life balance.
Yeah.
I don't even know where it is. I like this picture of him. He's just got like his arms out and he's just like got a like what's your fucking problem look on his face.
Yeah. No, this well, I don't know. I had read some other articles about this guy too, and I kind of would be interested in reading his book, to be quite honest with you. Because it's very odd to just hear someone make the argument that heroin's not that bad. That's a real, man, you're really going out on a limb there. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Nobody does that.
Well, like, I don't know. There's been so many stories over the last few years about how the opioid pandemic has led to more people trying heroin because they get cut off on their prescription pills.
Right, right.
And so they go to heroin to get that fix. And how addictive and deadly it is.
Yeah, well, this guy clearly isn't an addict, though. Right? And that's reading this article.
I mean, he's smarter than me. That's what he says.
Yeah, well, that's what he says. But, I mean, he's been able to keep a, you know, great career going. So, you know, it hasn't affected him yet. Or, you know, he's married and, he so he hasn't had any like consequences because of his heroin use yet. So, but I'm just saying that's the only reason why I kind of was like, well, it's easy for you to say, dude. It could be just as easy for him to say, like, you know, yeah, I drink a couple beers every night. You know, what are you going to do?
Right.
You know, I snort a few lines of H, you know, by the fire. That's what keeps me going. I don't know. I'm just, what a controversial statement.
And he's so.
During the opioid crisis.
Like, it sounds so blasé. Like, just the headline.
Right.
Like, for work-life balance. Like, what? Are using the heroin to balance your, like, how terrible is your work life that you need to resort to heroin?
Well,
like most people would
for sure.
Most people would like have a glass of wine or something and take the edge off.
How does this guy not that anybody has in the last year, but how do you go out with this guy for like a night out in the town? Like bring him on a bachelor party. What the hell happens? Somebody's gonna end up in the morgue.
Oh boy. Yeah, exactly. It seems like a real slippery slope. So Carl Hart is a Columbia University professor of psychology and neuroscience. He chairs the psych department and has a fondness for heroin, not only as a subject of scholarly pursuit, but also as a substance of personal use. At 54, the married father of three has snorted small amounts of heroin for as many as 10 days in a row and enjoyed it mightily, even if, as he recalls in his new book, Drug Use for Grown-Ups, Chasing Liberty in the Land of Fear, he's experienced mild withdrawal symptoms 12 to 16 hours after the last dose. But as Hart sees it, the discomfort is a worthwhile trade-off. There aren't many things in life that I enjoy more than a few lines by the fireplace at the end of the day, he writes, pointing out that the experience leaves him refreshed and prepared to face another day. Like, I thought heroin was a downer. Like, it's a depressant, isn't
right.
it?
Right. Like, yes.
I mean, is it just like getting him to have a good night's sleep? Or, like, I don't understand, like, how it keeps him refreshed.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because I think
when scotch doesn't do it for you anymore, I guess.
Because like I was like, it says he has mild withdrawal symptoms after the last dose, but
yeah,
like when it wears off, like I would think that like that would not be a good feeling.
No.
Like, and then like
sounds terrible.
Like if you're on it, like you, I would think you'd be sluggish and like tired and like. Like having a real hard time staying awake. I don't know.
Doesn't seem like it would be refreshing to me.
Like, it seems like a really dangerous thing for this guy to just be like, oh yeah, I recommend snorting heroin at night. Takes the edge off, you know, it really, really helps me out.
Quit living in the land of fear.
Oh, let's go on in the article here, but I was just so dumbfounded at this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Hart, who studies the effects of psychoactive drugs on humans, finds his use of the narcotic to be, quote, as rational as my alcohol use, like vacation, sex, and the arts, heroin is one of the tools that I use to maintain my work-life balance.
Crazy.
His reason for coming clean about doing opiates and the like is to advocate for decriminalizing possession of recreational drugs. The book makes the case that the demonization of drug use, not drugs themselves, has been a tremendous scourge on America, not least in reinforcing this country's enduring structural racism.
I agree with.
Heart cannot be reached for comment. Yeah, I can see that argument. That.
But this seems to be a little aggressive to make that argument.
Right. Like, you shouldn't be encouraging drug use. Just, you know, you shouldn't advocate for decriminalization of drugs while simultaneously encouraging drug use.
Right.
Like, usually the argument is it's a health issue, not a criminal issue. And right. That would be helping them get off of drugs.
Right.
Not, hey, let's just let everybody do drugs because they're awesome.
Yeah, and I mean, the Portugal decriminalized, Vancouver decriminalized, and like, what do you know? Pretty quickly, the rehab facilities were empty. I think Portland might have just decriminalized all.
Yeah, I think it was
so. Portland. That'll be an interesting test case. So I see the argument for sure. I see the argument. But just being like, I like to do a few lines, you know, by the fire. And, you know, it's just like sex. It helps keep my work-life balance. Like, I don't know. Yeah, what's wrong with scotch or red wine, dude? Seems right. Like a little aggressive to me. Or pot.
Yeah. I mean, that's one thing. Like, marijuana is one thing. But heroin, like, there's so many deaths and addictions tied to heroin. Yeah. And, like,
it's a weird...
There's so many like years and examples that, you know, people dying of overdoses and getting hooked on it and, you know, being unproductive in society because they got to get their fix.
Yes, he is. It'd be like him in, you know, the late 80s and into the 90s of advocating for, you know, not using protection during the AIDS like epidemic, like not. His argument isn't practice safe sex. His is like, no, like, still do it. You're fine.
Right.
Like, I do it all the time. I'm cool. You know what I mean? Like, it's one thing to say, like, practice safe sex. It's another thing to be like, no, raw dog it. Still, do not clean your needles either.
Exactly. This
Which
guy
is kind of, like, he's aggressive.
He's a public nuisance.
He kind of is. But I don't know. I don't know how he can make that argument. Like, okay, well, have you ever been to one of those, you know, pill mills in West Virginia and where, you know, like a quarter of the town is on heroin? Like, to make that argument, sir, Mr. Ivy League.
Or how many people died from taking opiates? And, you know, like we mentioned, you know, that leading to heroin use and people dying from that. Or like, where is he getting his heroin? Like, is he making his own heroin? Like, because nowadays, like, people are lacing that shit with fentanyl and, you know, other stuff that, you know, will kill you straight up.
Well, I wonder what Columbia thinks of this.
Columbia, like, he's probably tenured, so it doesn't fucking matter.
No, true. But I'm just saying, got to be odd for an employer to have an employee just kind of be like, I'm on heroin and I'm proud of it.
I wonder if, I mean, maybe it says later in the article, but like, he's basically just begging the police to come and visit him.
True. That's a great point.
Because he's basically just advertising that he has heroin on him, like, all the time.
Well, here's the thing, though. Remember, he's advocating for, you know, decriminalization, and he's against the war on drugs. So if I'm a New York City like investigator or cop, and then go on in like a witch hunt to search his home and then arrest him for drug possession, wouldn't that kind of be proving his point?
That's true. I was thinking that too. He's going to martyr himself.
Yeah. You know, I mean, so I don't know. If I'm a New York City, like, investigator, I'm kind of being like, all right, I'm not. Yes, he's admitting that he's a heroin user, but that's a tree I don't want to bark.
Right.
Bark up. I don't know. Crazy, you know, but, you know, he also likes ecstasy too. And that's, I just saw that that has passed some early trials with like the FDA to help treat, you know, post-traumatic stress. And, you know, obviously it has major advances, you know, with mental health. That could be a huge breakthrough too.
Yeah. Well, Hart told Insider that he hopes to see President Biden work toward federal regulation and licensing of the use of substances that are often described as social or societal menaces. And by his logic, if people are going to indulge, they should at least do it safely. For instance, he told the site, if you're going to use opioids, don't use alcohol as a background. The combination increases the likelihood of respiratory depression and death. It's not just heroin that keeps Heart Center, he claims. The prof is also a fan of the effects brought on by MDMA, better known as Molly or ecstasy, and methamphetamine, a drug that has caused the most overdose deaths in nearly half the U.S., according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. In describing MDMA, he recalled intense feelings of pleasure, gratitude, and energy. When I'm rolling, I just want to breathe deeply and enjoy it. The simple act of breathing can be extremely pleasurable. You know, this guy's starting to sound like he's living the T9X, the Tech 9 experience. You know that song?
Yeah, I know that song.
He's, yeah, Ecstasy, I love you very much. GHB, I love you very much. THC, I love you very much. What else? ACID, he loves acid.
Yeah.
I forget what else he loves. Basically every drug he loves. But he says, don't try this at home. Whereas Mr. Hart is saying, yeah, come on, let's do it. Let's do meth and ecstasy. I guess, you know, he is kind of saying, you know the effects before you do it and know the drug interactions before you do it to minimize the danger. But like, I gotta say, like, I don't know where he's getting this stuff. Like, if he's getting off the streets, like, you don't know what the fuck is in that stuff.
Now he's got to have a pretty good dealer.
Probably. Either he's making his own. I don't know.
Drug dealer to the stars. Wait, he's at Columbia? Well, he probably just...
I wonder if he deals
to... around with Artie Lang.
Well, Artie Lang is a cautionary tale.
Yeah, well...
If there ever was one.
Yeah, right. God.
He even... So back to the article here. He even found pleasure in snorting a version of so-called bath salts, a synthetic cathinone that's been linked to disturbing behavior from barking to breaking into homes. Hart's assessment, unequivocally wonderful, in his book, he recounts the effects as being euphoric, energetic, clear-headed, and highly social. Nice.
Nice.
I heard bath salts also make you try to eat your neighbors. Or, like, you see those people.
Maybe Mr. Bonilla was on bath salts.
They get frozen in, like, a weird position, like they can't move.
Yeah.
I think I've seen that before. You might be right. Mr. Bonilla, in our first article, might have been on bath salts. Although he sounded very lucid based on the description of his acts.
Maybe.
He was very prepared. you know, not to get back onto that one too long, but he said this is normal. So, like, how many other guys' dicks did he cut off and run across the street with?
Awful.
Anyway, so nice, in fact, that he writes about wanting to take the drug ahead of some awful required social event, such as an academic reception, Rep for Columbia has not returned the post's request for comment on Herc's illegal drug use. God, this guy. While recreational drug enthusiasts may salute Hart, the medical and addiction community may find the prof's utopian approach less than ideal. According to the CDC, in 2018, nearly 15,000 people died from drug overdoses involving heroin in the U.S. Some experts maintain that even legalizing cannabis, the mildest of recreational drugs, poses dangers, including an increase in visits to emergency rooms, as one recent report from the University of Michigan found. Plus, weed can have serious health effects. Smoke a couple times a day and marijuana will knock off your memory. That is pretty certain, Christian Hopfer, a professor of psychiatry at the University of Colorado School of Medicine, told the Post. And there's no question that legalization has a normalizing effect on something that used to be against the law.
Well,
I mean, last week on this podcast, we talked about two guys who were smuggling marijuana from Las Vegas to Montana, and they got so paranoid in Idaho that they called the cops and turned themselves in. So, I mean, there's drawbacks to every decision, you know. Well, acknowledging in his book that drug use is not for everybody.
Oh.
No shit. Hart cites America's founding documents and their promise of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness as reasons for having the choice to snort lines, smoke weed, and expand one's mind. You can live your life
there as you go. Choose.
You can live your life as you choose, he told Insider, and it's nobody's business as long as you do not interfere with anybody else doing the same. Although, like, some people, they can't help themselves, right?
No, that's a very...
And people who are doing drugs often do not just keep to themselves, right?
Well, and heroin's the top dog. That'll turn a... That's what they say. It's chasing the dragon because you're always chasing that first high.
Yeah.
So it turns the most normal people into addicts where alcohol and weed might not. So I don't know. Like I said, he hasn't had like really any consequences because of his use. So it's hard to say he's an addict or he's just kind of bullshitting himself. But man, that is an odd stance to take during our opioid epidemic, being pro-heroin.
I think
that's not a hill I'm willing to die on.
I don't know what this guy's deal is, but it seems like he has an advantage because he studies this type of thing, psychology and neuroscience. So he kind of understands like what the effects are, like how much to take, interactions to avoid, you know, what mixtures to avoid. And so he can kind of, take it in moderation, I guess, for lack of a better way of putting it. Whereas other people don't have that expertise. And he doesn't seem to understand that for other people, like they don't have the same knowledge that he does. And
so, it would be interesting to see read the book, to see what he says in the book. But from gathering from this article, he seems to be pretty callous to other people's issues with it.
Yeah, like based on this article, like he doesn't seem to understand that other people have more addictive personalities and are more likely to get addicted or die from taking these drugs.
Yeah.
Or to do something stupid while on these drugs that results in death of themselves or injury or death to other people.
Exactly.
So I think, his intentions may be good and his experiences are fine with it, but God, he needs to take a little broader look at society before he starts proposing some policy changes.
He seems like a barrel of laughs. seems like a guy I definitely would want to go to a soiree with, where he's taken heroin before to get to some academic function.
Or bath salts, I think was the
bath
one.
Bath salts,
I think that's the one he wanted to take. But
what's next? Amazonian tree frogs. What was the one we were talking about a couple months ago?
I think that's what it was. They were like burning the
sweat of frogs.
Yeah, it was like
serum of
they like cut frogs. Themselves and then burn the frogs or something, and
so they ooze.
Jesus. Yeah, although if this guy did that, they'd probably ban it because he's an African American gentleman, as we mentioned. When the rich white San Francisco crowd is into it, it's just some kitsch thing, you know.
Yeah,
this black guy.
That's sad but true.
Problem.
If there were some guys in the hood doing that, it would be the biggest scandal ever. But just because some rich woman who, you know, and that's in the Bay Area, white woman does it, it's fine. Ah, it's fine. Who cares? Who cares? Hell, I bet you Gwyneth Paltrow's putting together some product with Goop right now.
Oh, for sure.
With frog serum to stick up your vagina.
It'll make you shit and vomit everything out of your system, but it'll be fun.
Yeah.
I noticed this
might burn your labia off, but you really didn't like that labia anyway.
By the way, I noticed that this professor has very long fingernails, and it's...
What? Oh, I didn't notice that.
It's a little upsetting to me.
Yeah. You can see it. Yeah. What? Yeah, you can
see it better in the middle of the article. He looks angry in both of these pictures. Like, he looks incredulous. Like, somebody asked him a stupid question, and he's, like, trying to, you know, talk down to them.
Yeah. On the one picture, is like...
Like, he feels
Look,
insulted.
I do heroin, and I don't have any problems with it.
You're saying
yeah,
that you're saying that other people get handled? Yeah. Anyway, well, I would not encourage you to follow this guy's lead.
No, neither would I.
So, that's I think we're going to end it on that. On the PSA of maybe don't take heroin, MDMA, bath salts, methamphetamine, just for work-life balance. Maybe stick to something a little lighter.
Yeah. But, you know, McFlurry. That's what I'll do. After we're done here, Wolfie, I'm going to go get a McFlurry.
I hope the ice cream machine's working.
I'm banking on it.
You know, I don't get ice cream. I haven't gotten ice cream at McDonald's in years, but I got to say, I don't think I've ever ordered an ice cream at McDonald's and them say, and they've told me that the machine was down. I don't think I've
That's
ever
the
had
stereotype.
That
I don't really remember that ever happening to me either, but that might be issues in other parts of the country.
I don't know. Yeah. Like, I see people talk about it like it's a common thing. I'm like, I've never had that happen.
Well, no, Wolfie, we're white. They'll make it for us.
That's why they got rid of the twist flavor. Sorry. Only vanilla from here on out.
We're so far off the rails on this episode. Good Lord.
Well, let's wrap this up here. I thank everybody for listening, sticking with us all the way to the end. Make sure that you're subscribed and that you tell your friends about the podcast so that they can check it out too. If you're on Apple Podcasts, go ahead and give us a 5-star rating and review so that we can get in front of more people. Apparently that helps if you review us. And then you can follow me on Twitter at PositivelyWolf1. If you want to email us, it's positivelywolfie@comcast.net. Thanks again. Have a great day.